Good morning and welcome. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar today, and this is Your Call. Today, we are talking Lyme disease. You may have heard of it, bacterial infection that's primarily transmitted by the tick. It's called the Ixodes tick, but you probably better know it as a deer tick. On the West Coast, Lyme is already present. It's caused by these black-legged ticks, and it is one of the fastest-growing infectious diseases in the country. In fact, some experts in the medical community are even calling Lyme disease an epidemic. According to the Centers for Disease Control, every year, at least 300,000 more people are diagnosed with Lyme disease. That's about 25,000 new cases every month. Some experts argue that the complexity of the disease and the lack of accurate diagnostic tests and even meager research funding are all complicating treatment for the hundreds of thousands who are suffering the debilitating long-term symptoms and complications of the illness. Lyme was first identified in Lyme, Connecticut, more than 50 years ago, and since then it's been expanding its footprint across the country. There are hot spots in the northern part of the country, the Midwest, and here on the coast in California. Infected ticks have been found in 42 of California's 58 counties. So, what is Lyme disease, and what do we need to know about it? How can we prevent it? And once you are infected, will you ever get better? If there's anyone listening who has suffered from Lyme disease, I'm sure you've asked yourself that question many times over. Leah Gertner was first bitten by a Lyme-carrying tick back in 1998. She was misdiagnosed for 10 years until 2008. Leah Gertner is a scientist, a nutrition consultant, and she is passionate about cultivating better research and recognition for tick-borne illnesses. She's also on the advisory board of the Bay Area Lyme Foundation, a national organization committed to making Lyme disease easier to diagnose and simpler to cure. So glad to have you here, Leah. Thank you for being here in the studio with me today.
Thank you so much for having me and for introducing this topic that is very timely and very critical, and I'm really excited to get the word out to people in California who may not be aware that Lyme disease is here.
I think you'll be a real it'll be relief for a lot of people out there who just don't know that there are others suffering as they are. So glad to have you.
Thank you.
We're also joined on the phone by Dr. Stephen Harris. Since 2001, Dr. Harris has focused his practice on the diagnosis and treatment of Lyme disease and other tick-borne co-infections. Dr. Harris is also an active member of the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society, a professional medical society of physicians and scientists, and he's become an authority on effective treatment for chronic Lyme disease. So good to have you with us, Dr. Harris. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. And we want to invite you to join our conversation. What questions do you have about Lyme disease? Do you have it yourself? Please share your story with us. Give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Post a comment at yourcallradio.org. Leah, let's start with you. You were first bitten by a Lyme-carrying tick in 1998, but you were misdiagnosed until 2008. That means you lived with this for 10 years. Can you tell me about how you were first bitten? How did it happen? In fact, you were bitten twice, right?
Correct. So I was born in San Francisco. I was raised in Oakland. I'm a local girl. I went to UC Berkeley. I studied environmental science, and I decided for graduate school I wanted to explore the East Coast. I went to Cornell. I spent a lot of time teaching forest ecology and spending time outdoors. It's beautiful there. I didn't see the tick bite. And I didn't know at that point that New York was the most Lyme endemic area in the U.S., so they had really high concentration of Lyme disease-infected ticks. My advisor had Lyme disease, but I didn't know that you could not see the tick, that it could be so small, maybe the size of a period at the end of a sentence or a poppy seed, and that you may not get a bullseye rash, that, you know, maybe 70% on the East Coast, maybe 50% on the West Coast might get a bullseye rash.
And the bullseye rash is the one thing that people tend to look for, right?
It's fairly diagnostic if you get this ring, this growing ring that comes between 3 and 30 30 days after your bite, that might be a bullseye rash, and you need to explore that as a potential diagnostic for Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that you could have a small tick. You might not see. You might not see the bite. You might not get the rash. So I had a summer flu. Didn't think anything of it. And then I noticed that my heart felt like it was going to pop out of my chest and then it would slow down. And I'd been very athletic and healthy. I had pain between my ribs. I had trouble catching my breath. And I just felt achy and strange. So I went to the Cornell Medical Health Center. I had a resident there. I listened to my heart. She said, "You have a heart murmur." And I said, "Well, I'm 27 years old. I've never had a heart murmur before." And she sent me to the cardiologist. He couldn't figure out what was wrong. There were all these strange electrical things happening with my heart and physical things happening to my heart. And they thought maybe I was also stressed, so they sent me to a meditation class. And then the next 10 years, it just progressed. I had neurological symptoms, and it became a whole system infection. And I was pretty tough and sporty, and so I just kept with it. And then in 2008, I went camping in Mendocino and moved back to California with my husband, who was finishing medical school and doing his residency. And we went camping with our family, and I came back from Mendocino with a red circular rash, but it was a full rash. I mean, it was a filled-in circle, just a red blotch. On my torso. And I took a picture of it. I thought it was strange. It went away. And then a couple months later, my lymph nodes were very swollen. I had night sweats, fevers. I couldn't move my neck. I had meningeal swelling in my neck. My joints hurt, but it was a migrating joint pain, and they weren't swollen. It just sort of my elbows would hurt, and then my knees would hurt, and it would sort of switch around. My mind was not what it was. I was switching my words. So I would tell the kids, instead of saying, "Go get your pajamas on," I would say, "Go get your bathing suits on." And then I would hear the word come out of my mouth, but it wasn't the word I wanted to say. And I had strange appetite, nausea, all sorts of weird symptoms. Anyway, I was anemic. My hands and legs were cramped all the time. I was low in magnesium. And finally, my husband happened to be working with a doctor who was treating someone with late-stage Lyme disease. And he came home and he said, "Oh, my God, I think I know what you might have." And I said, "I don't have Lyme disease. There's no way." And then he brought the doctor over to our house and had him interview me. And the doctor listened to my symptoms and he said, "You need to get tested for Lyme disease and another tick-borne infection that's kind of like a malarial infection called Babesia." So I went and I got tested, and the tests aren't very, very accurate, but mine were CDC positive, so pretty reliably positive.
CDC meaning Centers for Disease Control.
Yes, and sometimes at the late stage you won't get a positive test, you'll get a negative, and that can be misleading. So I started treatment, and I went through a year of long-term treatment with several different antibiotics and antimalarials. And the heart problems that I had for 10 years disappeared, and the fevers and the night sweats and the brain fog and the strange neurological symptoms, all of it went away with treatment.
It's just so odd, backing up a bit. You said that your advisor had Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. So if that was something that was on your radar, why did it take so long to get diagnosed? It just never occurred to you that this was something that was even a possibility? And what about the clinicians? Right. Why weren't they figuring it out sooner?
Right. Well, only, maybe 10% of people will manifest the cardiac symptoms, like I had, Lyme carditis. So I think people are just trained. My husband's a doctor. He had a paragraph and maybe a minute in medical school about Lyme disease, and he was taught to look for a tick bite and a bullseye rash. And a summer flu, achy joints, swollen joints, monoarthritis, so maybe one knee that would be swollen. So there are some objective findings that doctors are used to looking for, things that they can see. But if it's something that patients are telling them, they don't know whether to believe them or how to assess them. And if the testing isn't great, I'm sure we'll get into that, but if the tests aren't obvious, then how does a doctor make that diagnosis? And Lyme disease is a little bit like syphilis. It's a spiral bacteria. It's a spirochete, which is like syphilis. And so it can infect any body system. It can go to your bladder. It can go to your brain. It can go to your joints. It can. And so for people, everyone's different genetically, and their lifestyle is different. Their diet's different. And it seems to affect people in a variety of ways. There are definitely common symptoms to look for, especially in the initial onset of the disease. But as it manifests into late-stage disease, it can really manifest differently for so many people. And doctors are overwhelmed, I think.
Yeah. And so when you say spirochete, you mean it's a corkscrew-shaped organism.
It's a bacteria that really looks like a corkscrew.
Dr. Harris, how typical is Leah's story? How difficult is it when you come across someone who's been spending years misdiagnosed?
Well, Leah's story is quite classic for those doctors who practice Lyme disease. And it amazes us over and over again when we hear these stories that seem to fit so well with Lyme and babesia, as Leah alluded to, that especially with the anemia and with the carditis, in the Lyme borreliosis complex, the Lyme disease complex, you have to look at these co-infections. And so sometimes it's not just a simple case of Lyme disease. It's a case of Lyme and some of these other opportunistic or co-infections that the tick is also carrying. This story is so common, and we see it over and over again. The stories that patients have gone for years and years with these multiple systemic complaints and a history of exposure to ticks, maybe not a known tick bite, but there's ticks that are infected all over the world and in every state in America. So one has to be open to the possibility that someone presenting like this has Lyme disease.
And because of the nature of the symptoms, Dr. Harris, I imagine there are patients who come to you saying, I think I have dementia. I think I have rheumatoid arthritis. I just think that the range of different symptoms are just difficult to nail down, are they not, unless someone is a specialist like yourself. What about the challenge to doctors in really being able to drill down and figure out what's happening in a patient when they come in and present with these symptoms?
Well, as a doctor, it's our responsibility to look at all the possibilities. We make what are called differential diagnoses. When somebody presents with a series of symptoms, then we try to establish the likelihood that some organism or some autoimmune phenomenon or some other aspect to disease is causing this series of symptoms. And Lyme disease is the great imitator of the 21st century. Just as syphilis was a great imitator of the previous century. It can affect every organ system. It can affect every organ. It can affect every part of the body. So if somebody presents with dementia, then as part of the differential diagnosis, one should look for signs of tick-borne infection.
Can it be fatal?
It can. It's not very common. The most common cause of fatalities in Lyme disease is, unfortunately, suicide. When patients are not being listened to, when patients have symptoms that go on for years and years, that affects their brain, that affects their heart, that affects their ability to function, their ability to move, sometimes the hopelessness takes over. And there's way too many cases of suicide related to Lyme, untreated or undiagnosed or undertreated.
That is just extraordinary. Leah, did you actually have a time when you were trying to figure out what was going on with you when you really did feel distraught?
I never felt suicidal or anything close to it, but certainly it's frustrating feeling like you're telling doctors that these things are real, and they're telling you that they don't understand why you could be having the symptoms. And I mean, I was married to one, and he didn't recognize it because it wasn't in his training to see those late stage Lyme symptoms. So I will add that the Center for Disease Control, there is recently acknowledgement that there have been several sudden cardiac deaths related to Lyme disease. They went back and looked at hearts that of young people who had passed away from sudden heart cardiac death, and they did find the Lyme, the spiral-shaped, this corkscrew bacteria in those hearts. And so it's just sort of opening a new window into how many deaths are caused by Lyme disease that we don't know about because we don't usually look.
866-798-8255. Are you a Lyme disease sufferer who's been looking for someone who can tell you what's going on with you? Is there a family member that you're concerned about who may have some of these symptoms and doctors have been unable to figure out what the problem is? Could it be Lyme disease? And are you going to be taking any special steps this summer to try to avoid it? 866-798-8255 is the number. We're talking Lyme disease today. Dr. Harris, why did it just seem to show up on the scene relatively recently, like in the 70s in Lyme, Connecticut? Any idea where this came from?
Well, there's been reported cases since the 1880s of what in retrospect looks like Lyme disease in Europe as well as in North America. In fact, there was not too long ago, a National Geographic report or Scientific American report about an ancient human who was found in the ice. And when they did autopsies, they found that there was indeed evidence of Lyme disease.
Any idea why it might be on the rise now?
Well, there's a lot of debate about this. It has been around. It was found in what happened was there was an outbreak of juvenile rheumatoid arthritis in a community in Lyme, Connecticut, and it was one of the mothers of this community who contacted Yale University, and a young Dr. Alan Steer went out and found that indeed there was likely a mini epidemic of this juvenile rheumatoid arthritis in these kids, and found that there was likely an infection. He thought it was a virus at first, and it wasn't until 1982 that it was found by Willie Burgdorfer to be an actual spirochete infection. And since that time, there's been more and more awareness. At the same time, there's been more and more debate and contention about what is Lyme disease, what are the various manifestations, and how prevalent is it, and how many cases are there. There's questions about and there's been quite a bit of study about the amount of acorns on the East Coast, for example, and the association with cases of Lyme disease every year. This has to do with weather patterns. How much the deer are able to eat, as the ticks are primarily on the deer on the East Coast. On the West Coast, it seems to be the smaller animals, rodents, that are the carriers of the ticks that are transmitting this infection. So it could be that there's climate change that has to do with this. It could be that there's bird migration pattern changes. It could be that there's more travel of people and there's more people who are enjoying the outdoors. And as an infection like this spreads, it's really hard to curb the increase unless there's great public knowledge, and there still isn't yet, despite all of what we're hearing.
And speaking of spread, Mark from Marin County has input about the potential spread of Lyme disease. Good morning, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I looked up, I don't know, about 7 years ago because I work with some people with Lyme disease, and I started finding NIH articles showing that 9% of all mosquitoes are carriers of Lyme. The dosage may be small, so people may not get a bullseye. They may not have an actual indicator at the time. Plus, there's plenty of new information saying that it can also be transmitted as an STD. And so what I recommend to people that I see, that they look at the films Under Our Skin 1 and Under Our Skin 2, because there's a lot of good information in that. And I also recommend people talk to or go online and find this group, Lyme Less, Live More, because they have a lot of good information for people.
Dr. Harris, any input on the possibility that it is a sexually transmitted infection and that perhaps mosquitoes are also vector?
Well, even if the mosquitoes can carry the Lyme, there's been no proof that the mosquitoes can actually transmit it. Willie Burgdorfer, in a private conversation, felt that any blood-sucking arthropod could potentially transmit this, but it hasn't been proven. And when the disease is such a contention in scientific communities, when there's such a debate, that the really solid science needs to come to to the fore to sort out these debates. As far as the sexual transmission possibility, there has been numerous cases of the organism in semen. There's also been cases of the organism in question found on the cervix via biopsy. There was a small study, a pilot study, that was done a few years ago that suggested that the DNA of one partner, the DNA of the organism of one partner was the same as the DNA of the, in another partner, suggesting that there was possible that the organism, that the same organism was in both partners. So there's early studies, and there's a suggestion by many that there is. However, the debate has not been satisfied, and it's very difficult as a practitioner when we're in such a hotbed of controversy over this disease about, one, underdiagnosing, and two, overdiagnosing. So the science still has not happened. Bay Area Lyme Foundation, as well as Stanford Lyme and other organizations are starting to look at some of these aspects and funding these very, very important studies that could be quite groundbreaking. At this point, though, there hasn't been NIH-funded studies, to my knowledge, that have really looked at these cases, though.
As we suspected, because there are so many people who are either suffering or wondering if this could be what's wrong with them, the lines are full, so let's get to Carol in San Francisco. Hi, Carol. Thanks for being here.
Hi there. Thanks. This is really timely, and a quick thing about my history, which is very bizarre, is I was treated for rheumatoid arthritis back in 1971, and maybe about 10 years ago, a family friend said, oh, I remember a bullseye rash. Now, I was told that I was treated with antibiotics that were similar, so that's just a history. Now, this 2 weekends ago, I was bitten by two ticks, and we, did a full-body tick check, and I think we got them out properly with the tweezers. You know, we did a bunch of research. But I have been amazed at this, you know, quote-unquote debate and controversy, just thinking, wow, wouldn't a conservative approach be the way to go with this? So where I am is I fought, like, tooth and nail to get antibiotics because I did have one bullseye ring from one of the tick bites. So I have a question, A, about the bullseye ring. It was kind of a strange-looking ring, and it went away in 2 days. That's one question. You know, is there a, you know, typical presentation of a ring? I mean, luckily, maybe it's lucky that I did get some kind of a ring. The second thing is there a best course? Because there's like 14 days, 21 days. No, you have to do 30 days. Someone told me yesterday. No, IV transfusion of antibiotics. That's another question. And then lastly, I did send the ticks to the Sonoma Health Lab to be tested, and they did come back negative for Lyme, which is great. But then people are telling me, look out for Borrelia miyamotoi. And I have really no idea what that is and haven't had the time to do the research. So those are kind of all my questions. And then generally, why is there such a huge controversy versus a conservative approach?
Good questions, all. Dr. Harris?
Okay. All right. So the bullseye ring can have many different presentations. Sometimes there's the central spreading, the central clearing with the outer spreading. That's where the term erythema migrans comes from. Many of the rashes are indeed solid. The Center for Disease Control and the Infectious Disease Society says that it has to be, 6 centimeters for it to count as a so-called erythema migrans. It doesn't usually go away in 2 days, so that might not be something that it could. There's a lot of rashes that the ticks can cause. The tick saliva can cause a rash. There can be a local allergy to that, and so I might suspect that as well. Let's see, that was a bullseye rash. The rheumatoid arthritis issue since 1971, it's unclear how much rheumatoid arthritis is caused by Lyme disease. Definitely, we find that patients with rheumatoid arthritis, we do find some of those patients do indeed have Lyme disease as the cause of their rheumatoid arthritis or the presentation that looks like rheumatoid arthritis. And when we treat with the right amount of antibiotics for long enough, then we do find that their symptoms at least go into remission. What was the third question? Well, let me get to the Borrelia myomotoi. So there's Borrelia burgdorferi, which is a causative agent of Lyme disease, and then there's something called relapsing fever Borrelia, which we've recently found is quite important in California and other parts of North America and Australia and Europe, and it's a very close cousin. It's the same genus. It's a Borrelia spirochete, but it's not exactly burgdorferi, and myomotoi is one of the most common, one of the most popular ones that we've found that can also cause disease in humans. And many ticks, there was recently a study sponsored by Stanford that and Bay Area Lyme Foundation that found that in various parks, I believe it was 20 parks, Leah may know better, that every park had ticks that had the Borrelia myomotoi or Borrelia burgdorferi. So, and interestingly enough, in many of the parks in the Bay Area, there was more myomotoi than there was burgdorferi. It was between like 3% and 20% of the ticks in various parks had these infections. So, there are tests to do through specialized laboratories, but as far as I know, Sonoma County is not regularly testing for relapsing fever Borrelia, of which the myomotoi is one of them. The controversy in Lyme, there's really at least two camps, and one camp is the Infectious Disease Society of America, and they find that via their research that Lyme is hard to catch and easy to treat, and that typically 30 days is enough to, or 28 days is enough to cure this, that there's IV antibiotics to use in very severe neurologic and cardiac cases, but that sometimes retreatment may be necessary, but very rarely. Now, there's just as much, if not more, research from the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society camp that suggests that Lyme is much easier to catch, has much more various manifestations, and can be quite difficult to treat, especially if the organism has been in the body undetected for any length of time, like 6 months or longer. It can be much more difficult to treat. There's a lot of science that backs that up. I'm biased to that camp, and I find that many of these patients need in tick bites, treating tick bites, there's several different protocols. Some say that you need 1 or 2 doses of doxycycline. Some say 10 days. Many of the doctors in the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society find that probably 3 weeks, if not longer, of antibiotics for a tick bite in an infected area until the tick is found to be negative. So in your case, the fact that the ticks were negative for Borrelia burgdorferi for Lyme, not to talk about relapsing fever, because we really don't know how to deal with that yet, but that if the ticks came back negative, if you were my patient, I would probably have you on the antibiotics until those ticks were found to be negative for Lyme. Now it's a little different. We would hopefully test for the relapsing fever Borrelia. But there's so much controversy between these two various camps, and it seems that even when the research is helping to solve some of these debates, the various studies can be criticized by either side. It seems that so much opinion and expert opinion and belief system has come into this disease. It's become quite a phenomenon as a more of a political disease than something that science, the halls of science, can even fix.
And that's extraordinary, the fact that you said politics and insurance coverage and all that has weighed in. And for some of us, Dr. Harris, what you just said sounded like a word salad. But for those people who are suffering, Borrelia burgdorferi sounds like, oh my God, he knows what I'm talking about. He gets it. He knows what I'm suffering with. And we have people on the line lined up to ask you questions. We know you can only stay with us for just a few more minutes. The longer you can stay, the better. People are so anxious to hear from you and from Leah Gaertner. She's a scientist and Lyme disease survivor, along with Dr. Harris, a Bay Area Lyme disease specialist. We're going to take your calls after a quick break. This is your call.
There are are many ways you can take part in today's conversation. By the telephone, although all the lines seem to be filled up, you may also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you may go to yourcallradio.org, the website. If you'd like to participate in today's show, I think we have a line open at 866-798-8255. Coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, it's BBC's World Have Your Say. We call it soccer. The rest of the world calls it football. Some fans are quite exuberant in their passion for their teams. Apparently, there are a bunch of Russian hooligans who are coming and making things terrible for people in France hosting this big tournament. We'll talk about that on BBC's World Have Your Say at 11 o'clock this morning, just a half hour from now here on KLW.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us now, I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows and share there and find out what's coming up next. Speaking of which, on the next Your Call, how to do safe and affirming environments to improve LGBTQ youth well-being. It's rare to have a conversation about the real challenges and the hardships that queer youth face. This year's Frameline 40, the San Francisco International LGBTQ Film Festival, will be showcasing diverse queer youth stories of resilience and the power of love. What are the challenges that queer youth face today, and how can we create more supportive environments? Hope you'll join the conversation Thursday with Rose Aguilar and you. And if you have a show idea for us, please drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're talking Lyme disease, transmitted to more than 300,000 Americans each year, and untreated, it can produce a wide range of symptoms. And we hope that you'll give us a call to get your questions answered, 866-798-8255. Dr. Harris, we know that you have to leave us shortly, so let's get to as many callers as possible. Annette in San Francisco, thanks for joining us.
Hi, I've been suffering from Lyme disease for probably 30 years. I was bitten probably in 1979, but in 2001, I had a tetanus shot, and it really brought out the Lyme disease. I was paralyzed from the waist down for 7 months. I didn't know what was wrong with me, saw 9 different doctors, including Stanford, UCSF. Nobody knew. Finally, my herbalist figured out what it was. I went and got tested. I had Lyme disease. I was on a cocktail of antibiotics for 3.5 years. They didn't help me. I felt sick every single day. I finally found an MD who was a homeopath, and homeopathic medicine has helped me. After 30 days, I started to feel normal, and I'm still on homeopathic medicine. It's been, 15 years, and I'm almost 99% cured. I can walk normally. I'm even starting to run. I still have pain in my legs and standing, but I just got to say that the antibiotics after all that time just did not help me and only made me sick.
If it's okay, Lee, I'm going to ask you, because you might be able to relate to the search for relief. Can you speak to that search?
Sure. I think people who have undiagnosed late-stage Lyme disease are desperate, and they will go to an average. My son actually wrote a song about it. It's called 10 Years and 17 Doctors, because that seems to be the amount of time and the amount of doctors that I hear people saying they had to go through to get a diagnosis and to get well. So certainly I've been to every sort of integrative medical practitioner there is. And actually that was after Lyme disease. That was in conjunction with the antibiotics, because I feel like antibiotics alone are powerful, but, antibiotics run their own risks. They mess with your microbiome. Your intestinal gut flora is crucial to your immune system. Some people say 80% of your immune system lies in your gut. So if you're, if you're destroying that microbiome, those bacterial, homeostasis in your gut with antibiotics, you might run into problems you didn't have before, and you can get infection. C. diff is an infection you can get from overuse of antibiotics. So antibiotics are not without risk, and they certainly do seem to help the majority of people with Lyme disease, early stage and late stage. But I think it's not necessarily enough for everybody. I think keeping your immune system up with diet and exercise, as much exercise as you can tolerate, I think acupuncture and meditation and therapy and anything you can do, especially around diet, will definitely help people whose immune systems have been heavily impacted by Lyme disease.
Okay, let's go to Leslie in Oakland. Leslie, welcome.
Today. I am a long-term sufferer with not Lyme disease, but other systemic diseases, and have had some similar experiences around getting better, seeing the establishment doctors here in this country, the United States. And I wanted to introduce a term to your listeners they might not be familiar with. It's called iatrogenic. Iatrogenic means that your illness was caused by medical treatment, things like shots and antibiotics. So it's very fortuitous that the last caller did mention about the microbiome in the gut. And I was going to steer the people who might be suffering from Lyme to something called functional medicine. Functional medical specialists have MDs, but they also have access to non-standard tests. It's very important to remember that because in this country alone, of all the industrialized nations, we still have the insurance industry, which has a very, very negative effect in terms of what's available for treatment and for testing and for protocols in general. Insurance has been made illegal in the rest of the industrialized world because it's considered to be racketeering, and it really holds back medical science. There isn't a controversy in other countries. There's one here because our tests are useless, especially against systemic diseases, and they're not showing what the doctors need to see in order to be able to treat.
Dr. Harris, we know you have to. Thank you so much for joining us, Leslie. And Dr. Harris, we know you have to leave us soon. Can you just talk about, I believe she called it iatrogenic, caused by medical treatment, and any last thoughts that you might have before you have to leave us?
Right. No, I do think that there is definitely harm that happens. I think that in this case, antibiotics can be very dangerous. I think that, however, many other medications, such as steroids and immune things that destroy the immune system, in the face of an active infection, is even worse. I think that what the doctor has to do, the practitioner has to do, is discuss the risks and benefits. The patient has to understand what are the potential risks, what are the potential benefits, and it has to be a group decision between the patient and the practitioner. It has to be, there has to be informed consent. This does happen, but in the thousands of patients I've seen, the antibiotics, while they have been necessary, maybe not sufficient, but they have been necessary in the vast majority of patients. I do work with others who can't tolerate antibiotics, or who have been damaged, have had C. diff in the past, have had problems, allergies to antibiotics, and can't take a pharmaceutical approach, so have had to do other ways. And in this, there has to be a by any means necessary that safe approach. So when someone can improve via homeopathy, via herbal treatments and naturopathy, then that's amazing. But I do find that when it's a risk benefit analysis that one has to do, and the patient has to do that with the practitioner. Those are my parting words, that patients can get better. This disease is so complex. There's a book by Richard Horowitz, Why Can't I Get Better, that discusses the multiple systemic infectious disease syndrome that Lyme is really a part of. And I encourage patients to read that book because it describes that it's not just the organisms all the time. It is the body, too, that everyone is going to have a different response to treatment, but that patients can get better. They may not get cured because the tests aren't good enough to prove cure, but the majority of patients, via debulking of infection, whether it's antibiotics or natural antibiotics or even homeopathy, as well as detoxifying the body to prevent further disease, to encourage a correct, a healthy lifestyle, to enhance the immune system, to enhance blood flow, all of these things together can allow the patient to improve, if not get fully well. So I'll leave you with that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Harris. Dr. Stephen Harris focuses his practice on the diagnosis and treatment of Lyme disease and other tick-borne co-infections. Thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Harris. We have a phone call, an email, actually, from Steve in Montana. He says he suffered Lyme disease for 10 years and had such a hard time getting treatment here in the U.S. that he ended up going to Germany. He says he received excellent treatment from St. George Clinic in Germany. Leah Gertner, you are a clinician and a sufferer. I don't know if you even consider yourself to still be a sufferer. Do you ever get over it? And what were some of the hoops that you had to jump through? Did you ever consider having to go outside the country to get relief?
Well, when I was first diagnosed and I started going through treatment, treatment can be pretty tough in the beginning. Like we said, Dr. Stephen Harris and I both said, it's a little bit like syphilis, this bacteria. And when you first are treated after you've had late-stage Lyme disease, you might experience something called a Jarisch-Herxheimer reaction. And that's something that was a name given to a reaction to people who were getting over syphilis, being treated with antibiotics, a reaction that they would have where you start to feel worse before you feel better. And I felt like I needed to be put in a hospital and taken care of. And I was trying to take care of my kids and live my life. The insurance wouldn't pay for anything. And so I was trying to do it all from home. But I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if there was a place I could go where I could be inpatient and people could monitor this and that and everything that's happening with my Jarisch-Herxheimer reaction and take care of me there. And we don't have a whole lot of that happening in the U.S., but it's starting to happen.
Why are insurance companies giving such pushback on this, given how prevalent it is? If 300,000 Americans are diagnosed every year, mm-hmm. why is there so much resistance from the insurance industry?
I can't really answer that. The Bay Area Lyme Foundation, what we do is we try to come up with solid science. We support research at UCSF, at Stanford, at Johns Hopkins, at Harvard, and we try to come up with data that's irrefutable, and we hope that the data speaks for itself for insurance agencies, for doctors, for patients, for the government, for policymakers. We just want to find out the best science.
Okay, let's go to Marin County. Dana, thanks for joining us.
Oh, hey there. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Hi. Hey, I really just want to say thank you for having the show today. You know, I was featured in that documentary, Under Our Skin. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've been sick 16 years, and I'm doing really well. But I got to tell you, it's a long road, and it's an up-and-down road. And I just want to reach out to all those patients because I know how it is, and really, at the end of the day, it's the self-care. It's the everyday self-care and having a good community because it's so isolating, this disease. And you look fine, and people don't understand it. And I just want to reach out to everyone. I didn't expect to be on the phone right now. I have a community called Lyme Less Live More, and we support people on daily self-care. And, you know, really the long road is how we get well. And, you know, you can get better and better, and then you have good years, and then you dip. You have some stress come up in your life, some trauma, and it resurfaces. So it's a long road, but support is everything.
Thank you so much for your input, Leah. I'm sure this must sound very familiar to you.
Yes, actually, I've met Dana. She's interviewed my husband. My husband actually became a physician who was willing to treat people with late-stage Lyme disease and early stage because of what he witnessed with me for those 10 years and two bites. So I think he's actually up on her website. We need more awareness around this disease so that fewer people end up in the situation that Dana and I have both been in. We need people to know that Lyme disease is in California. As Dr. Stephen Harris says, it's in every Bay Area park. And doctors, I unfortunately, I'm in a position at the Bay Area Lyme Disease where people talk to me about their Lyme experience and about their tick bites. And unfortunately, people will go to their doctors, and sometimes the doctor will say, there's no Lyme disease in California. I won't test you or treat you. But it is on the California Department of Public Health website. You know, it is very well known that Lyme disease is here in the Bay Area, and it's in California. The Bay Area Lyme Disease has funded some studies through Stanford that have really shown that it's here. And there are multiple infections that you can get from a tick. It's not just Lyme. It's probably too complicated to go into them. But it's ideal if you get a tick bite, then you find the tick, to remove it with sharp tweezers. Don't try the Vaseline or the nail polish or the burning or anything. Just get pointy nose tweezers. Go as close to your skin as possible. Do not squish the body, because then it will sort of vomit its contents back into you. And you don't want that, because that's where the bacteria are. The bacteria are in the tick's gut. So you want to go as close to the head as possible, as close to your skin, and pull straight back without squishing it. And you want to put the tick in a Ziploc bag with a moist paper towel. And you want to try to identify it. There, you can look on the Bay Area Lyme website. You can identify whether it's what's called a dog tick or a black western legged tick. And those carry different diseases. We worry more about the Western black-legged tick, the Ixodes pacificus, like you mentioned. Then once you identify it, if it is an Ixodes pacificus or a Western black-legged tick, then you want to send it in for testing. The Bay Area Lyme Foundation does offer free tick testing, and we'll test for those multiple pathogens. So we'll test for Lyme disease and Babesia and Ehrlichia and some of the other infections you can get, not just Lyme disease, which is what County Health will test for. Unfortunately, we just started this service in February, and we're expecting maybe a few hundred ticks a month, and we've gotten 6,000, and we're a little bit overwhelmed. So the turnaround time may not be what you need for diagnostic purposes, but I think it's good to take your tick in for testing if you got bit and it's been in for a while, and find out what it was carrying and what it could have given you. You can go to your county health, or you can send it away for tick testing. I think Igenix, Bay Area Lyme, there are people in Pennsylvania that will test it. Just get it tested.
Okay, let's get another call in. Hi, Stuart from Palo Alto. Thanks for waiting.
Hello. We have a daughter that's been treated for late-stage Lyme disease for some years, and two questions. How likely is it the mother can transmit through the placenta to the child the Lyme infection? And also, what is the evidence we have for mold in the general environment and its effect on Lyme?
Leah Gertner?
So people with late-stage Lyme disease do tend, I don't know if there's been any scientific study on this, maybe Bay Area Lyme should fund a study in this, but I don't think there's been any official study showing the Lyme-mold connection, but certainly Dr. Richie Shoemaker has written a book that talks about this, and I think most people in the Lyme community have noticed that they're very sensitive. You know, there's been that correlation, the sensitivity to mold that comes up after an infection.
And I also want to kind of weigh in on the fact that so many people who are in search of relief have to pay out of pocket. And in many cases, it becomes a financial burden in addition to the physical and emotional burdens, yes?
Yeah, my treatment, I think the first year was $60,000 out of pocket, so I borrowed heavily for that. And I don't think that's an abnormal thing to happen to somebody who has late-stage Lyme disease and is exploring all the different options for treatment. The medicine that really helped my heart completely recover was for the Babesia, the malarial-like organism that can be transmitted by ticks around here and throughout the world. It's $700 a bottle. It wasn't covered by insurance.
And we had an email, too, from a caller, a person who said, how much is it to get tested for Lyme?
It depends. It can be from $100 to $300 to $400. If you have insurance and you have a good reason and you have a doctor who's willing to test you, it should be covered by your insurance through LabCorp or Quest. But like I said, those tests, we're still working on trying to come up with a better diagnostic. The Bay Area Lyme Foundation is working on supporting researchers in this, and the Center for Disease Control is also coming out with a newer version of the test, because this one is very imperfect. But you should be able to have that covered by insurance.
I'm wondering, too, I was so surprised when Dr. Harris said that it's not necessarily a fatal disease, except that people who search in vain for relief or treatment or just for someone to believe them actually commit suicide. We were talking a bit before the program about the fact that people kind of thought you were kind of nuts.
Right.
And so how do you address the emotional toll that this takes?
I think, you know, I've heard people say I'd rather have cancer because it's diagnosed. It's, you know, insurance will cover it. My friends will give me sympathy. If I have untreated late-stage Lyme disease, people think I'm crazy and I'd rather have cancer. That's a little extreme for me, but I understand the sentiment because there's nothing like feeling bad and having people deny your reality.
I'm wondering, too, if, with just a few minutes left, if you have any final thoughts. My understanding from a friend who has suffered with this was that, first of all, she didn't know for how long the tick had been there. But more importantly, when it was discovered, she was only given 3 days of antibiotics, when in fact 3 months of antibiotics might have actually saved her all of the suffering that she had. So if you have any thoughts about what you can tell people about as we go into the summer months and people are out hiking and biking, you talked about removing the tick, but once it's removed, it's sent off, it's tested, it's positive, then what should they insist from their healthcare providers?
They should try to find a Lyme-literate physician. So there is the ILADS site, and there is the IDSA site, and there are different ways to find people who will treat you for Lyme disease. But I think prevention is key, and so what I like to say is, you know, if you go out in nature, please do not let this scare you from going out in nature. I absolutely want to encourage everyone to get out and enjoy our lovely Bay Area. I mean, we're so blessed to be here. So please go out, but just try to stay in the middle of the path because you might find ticks questing on the edges of the grasses on the sides of the path waiting to hitch a ride. Sometimes they're around log piles or leaf litter. Northern California tends to be a little worse than Southern California in terms of infection rates. But just check yourself when you come home. Take a shower, check yourself, check your kids. If you have a dog, you know, sometimes people get ticks, their kids get ticks because the dog likes to sit in the kid's car seat and the dog brought the tick in, not the kid. So just be careful and check yourself.
Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Leah Gertner. She's a scientist, nutrition consultant, and a member of the Bay Area Lyme Foundation Advisory Board. Thank all of you for joining us, for your phone calls and emails. Sorry we couldn't get to all of you. Clearly, this is a subject of great importance, and hopefully you've got some takeaway information that will be helpful as we head into the summer months. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar today, and this is Your Call. On the next Your Call, how do we create safe and affirming environments for queer youth? This year's Frameline Film Festival showcases diverse stories of queer youth, of their resilience, and the power of love in their lives. What are the challenges young LGBTQ people face today? And how has the reality of being young and gay changed since Frameline began 40 years ago? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.